When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Ohio seniors, make the right call for better Medicare benefits with Medical Mutual. Call 1-866-966-9338 to find a plan today. Enroll by December 7th.
2-2 pitch. Swing and a long drive. Deep left. Way back. Gone.
Hey, everybody. JJ Cooper, Jeff Ponce here. Baseball America World Series preview podcast. We didn't want to go. I know that Jeff's already talked to Dylan a little bit about the World Series, but I wanted to talk World Series with Jeff, kind of just do a preview pod before this starts. I would say that we both fit in the category. We love postseasons. We love baseball. But even though neither of us have a rooting interest in this, I would say that we both fit in the really excited about this World Series. Jeff, you know, what are you feeling as we sit here recording this on World Series Eve?
Yeah, I think, you know, the biggest thing for me is this is the premium matchup that I think everybody from a best team standpoint, right? The best possible game. There's really no conversation about two other teams were probably better and they had bad luck or this injury happened or whatever. This is two juggernauts. I don't think we've had a World Series of this magnitude and star power, frankly. I don't know if we've had one in my lifetime. You know, I think like when you start to go back historically over some of the numbers, and I think I shared some of them with you, Sarah Langs, who did great work, had tweeted out a bunch of these the other day. But when you look at things like, you know, it's the first time, and it might be since the 50s that the two home run leaders have faced off from the AL and NL in a World Series. It's the first time since 2012 we've seen the, you know, presumptive MVPs in Shohei Ohtani in the NL side and Aaron Judge on the AL side. It's the first time they've met since 2012. I think the first time before that was 1988. And then it just looked at the expansion period. So it was 69 on. And a majority of them were in the 70s with like those great Reds teams. And then whatever team would pop up and try and challenge
the A's or the Red Sox or whoever.
Yeah. And they lost to the Orioles in 72, right? So, I mean, in 70 as well. So I think, like, to me, I said this to my father yesterday. I said, there's like a Ken Burns documentary, Bob Costas documentary voice element set up for this series. If it goes six or seven games and we get some, you know, some memorable all-time classics, that would be great. But I think it has the opportunity to be that, to be one of these World Series where everybody remembers when Ohtani's, you know, World Series debut and him and Judge traded home runs and Juan Soto and Freddie Freeman, Mookie Betts. There's so much star power here that I think for me, that's the thing I'm most focused on is like, wow, this is the Mickey Mantle versus the Dodgers kind of matchup that my grandfather would have talked about, or my father or my uncle, you know.
We have four different players who've already won MVPs playing in the series. Giancarlo Stanton, Aaron Judge, Shohei Ohtani's won two, Mookie Betts, and Freddie Freeman. You know, I mean, like, and Freddie Freeman. Like, that's remarkable. Juan Soto hasn't won an MVP award, but I think that we can all agree that Juan Soto, it would not surprise any of us if Juan Soto has an MVP before his career is out. I mean, he's a top tier. We have a Cy Young winner in Gerrit Cole. We have 30 all-star appearances for the Dodgers combined, 30 all-star appearances for the Yankees combined. And that's active rosters. We're not talking about guys on IL or things like that, but the projected, because they haven't had to finalize them yet, but projected active rosters. That's a lot of star power. Like you said, if you said right now and you did a ranking of, give me the 10 best players in the game at this moment, I would say that four of the players in this series would be in that group. Maybe, you know, I don't know if you go five, but probably four. I would say that Judge, Ohtani, slam dunk. Betts, slam dunk. Soto, slam dunk. Then you would get into, okay, does Gerrit Cole fit in that? You know, again, I think Freddie Freeman maybe a little bit too banged up, a little bit at the tail end where, but you could, again, those are guys who have been there. This is everything you could ask for from that standpoint. It's West Coast versus East Coast. It's big markets. It's big brands. I like the way that Jeff Passan put it. We have a story on our site you can check out about how this is the year where I would not be surprised at all if the World Series goes back above the NBA Finals in ratings. But Jeff Passan put it another way, which I thought was interesting, which is this is the year we're going to find out what is the ceiling of a World Series ratings in 2024. Because like you said, Jeff, it's really hard to kind of spell out like what you could do to make a World Series more compelling to what I would say is the casual fan, right? Like, we're not the casuals. You're listening to this. You're probably not the casual fan. But my kids, who have no interest in baseball, know who Shohei Ohtani is, and they know who Decoy is. And, you know, like, they actually ask about Decoy, to be honest, more than they ask about Shohei. But you know, that kind of thing. Like, these are big brands that could bring in fans who normally are not going to tune in to the World Series in just a normal run-of-the-mill year. So we're going to see what that is. But this is the Baseball America podcast. We're not going to spend the podcast digesting Judge versus Ohtani or things like that. We're going to go a little more granular because that's what we do. And Jeff, one of the things that does stand out to me, these are lineups that are star-studded. Like, the Yankees lineup, not just star-studded, but like expected to be star-studded. Just another story up at baseballamerica.com. Check out where we kind of found this. Like, the Yankees will have days where their entire starting lineup will be players who were top 100 prospects at one time, you know, because every single one, and by the way, not just them, but then some guys who are on the bench as well will be top 100, you know, former top 100 prospects. The Dodgers don't have that. We never rank Kike Hernandez in the top 100. He's probably going to start most games. You know, there are a couple others, but they are also loaded with players who are long thought to be greats, who've proven to be great. But when we look at even, you know, before you take out all the Dodgers starting pitching injuries, one thing that does jump out to me here, Jeff, is and I don't want to overemphasize like making lessons from the teams who make it the World Series, but when I look at these two bullpens, it does really jump out to me that these are not star-studded bullpens. These are bullpens where if you said anywhere, it's hard to say that two teams who are spending as much as these teams are spending are going the cheap route, but it does jump out to me that two members of the Yankees bullpen were pitching for the White Sox in 2024, the worst team, not just in baseball this year, but the worst team in baseball in many years. And the White Sox said, nah, we're good, and just cast them aside. And the Yankees are like, yeah, we'll take them. And here they are. You know, you have a Jake Cousins. You have, Tim Hill. You have Tim Mizea, who was same thing with the Blue Jays. You know, they've taken cast-offs and turned them into useful players in the postseason here. Luke Weaver has become kind of their lights out closer, and I would
say
they
got him off of waivers in September 23.
Yeah, I mean, this is it. So, am I overgoing here? You know, overdoing this, and again, on the Dodgers side, too, the Dodgers have some relievers not on the roster in some cases who are making some significant money. But Ryan Brazier, you know, who's been starting games for them, 2023, right? Red Sox release, Anthony Bonda. Acquired in this year from the Guardians for cash considerations, which anytime you see traded for cash considerations, that is, we're getting rid of this guy. But if you want him, we're willing to send him your way. You know, Blake Treinen is not a big money guy. Daniel Hudson, not a big money guy. Brent Honeywell claimed off waivers from the Pirates, and he's pitching for them. They do have some draftees. Ben Kasperius, who was in our top 30 for the Dodgers this year. Yeah, you know, Landon Knack is kind of, you know, who was our second round pick. There's a couple years has been a top 10 prospect for the Dodgers. But am I going overboard here? But I think it does kind of just show the ephemeral nature of bullpens again, that these two teams could be here. And I tee this up for you because you are Mr. Pitch Design and all that for us. Like, it does kind of strike me as it's like, it's, you know, you love to kind of pull up the sleeves and dive into the analytics and the metrics on this. It does strike me as is it's a lot of, again, not everything, but there is a large aspect of making a good bullpen that is figuring out how to get the most out of the pitchers you have is the way I guess I would put it.
Yeah. And I think part of it too is, you know, just optimizing traits that are outlier or exceptional. And sometimes that is pitch design with a guy like Luke Weaver, you know, who was a, you know, a name
top 100 prospect
at one point, you know, was a starter and it sort of didn't ever, you know, take off or work with St. Louis and bounced to, you know, the Diamondbacks and that didn't
work. Or Cincinnati.
Yeah. Ended up in Seattle afterward. And the Yankees, you know, get this guy at the end of last season and they figure something out with, and I'm paraphrasing a little bit here from some bits and pieces I've pulled together from, you know, different content that's been out there, but more or less, you know, improved in the spin efficiency on his four seam fastball and changed, I think, the grip on his changeup and just really allowed him to, number one, you know, get to a little bit more velocity, get behind the ball a little bit more. So there was more ride. And then, you know, made that changeup even more effective with some of the changes there on the fastball and how it played off of that. And then I think, you know, like, you know, the grip was altered a little bit as well. But, you know, he kind of ticked up in a few small ways that you sort of wonder when they acquired this guy, did they see traits or was he showing something late in the season with Seattle that they were like, hey, if this guy's available, you know, let's pick him up. And I think like Clay Holmes is good, but not as dominant as he had been. And he's a little up and down. But when he's right, you know, he drives a ton of ground ball outs. It's a really interesting look as well. So I think he gives you something a little bit different from Weaver. And I think Weaver's emergence allowed them to then not have to rely on Holmes as the closer. He's kind of at this point, you know, pretty much supplanted him.
Which deepened their pen.
Yeah. And I think, you know, you then look at some of the other guys that had successful years. Tommy Canely's been in this organization, you know, with the Dodgers at one point, with the White Sox, with the Rockies, kind of been up and down from AAA, you know, have these great seasons. He's just throwing like nothing but changeups now. like in almost entirely. He had what one outing where he threw like 30 something consecutive changeups or something crazy. So he gives you a different look. And then, you know, you bring in Jake Cousins, who then gives you a different look from, you know, either of those guys that we mentioned. So I think that's all part of it. You just have this, you know, variations of looks. You got a lot of sinker ball guys in this pen. You know, when you're talking about Holmes and Cousins, and then Tim Hill is entirely a ground ball guy. He's got in season this year, he has a near 70% ground ball rate. You know, so the goal, and doesn't throw very hard, but it's an unusual look. So, you know, they're able to just change, I'll say it's almost eye levels and release points and, you know, pitch types and just kind of give you an uncomfortable look each inning when they're deploying this bullpen. And I think that's one of the reasons that they've been successful. And, you know, the Dodgers, it's really not all that different. They have a bunch of different looks. They have a ton of power in that bullpen. Both of these bullpens, you know, rate pretty highly in terms of stuff plus in the playoffs. I think I looked at some chart. I think it might have been Eno that made it the other day. And he had like what the average is for the playoffs and like where teams fell in terms of stuff and, you know, control plus. And they were both pretty similar from that perspective. But I think once again, like you know, you go through here and there's free agents, you know, a trade for Kopech. You know, they got Evan Phillips off of waivers from the Rays back in August of 21. Signed, you know, Daniel Hudson in December of 21. You know, they purchased Anthony Vanda from...
And they signed Daniel Hudson, and then they bring him back, and then they bring him back, and then they bring him back. Yeah. He's been like a...
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And, you know, Ryan Brazier was signed, you know, as a free agent from the Red Sox. You mentioned Honeywell, you know, they have a homegrown guy here and Henriquez, though, I don't think, you know, we're going to see a whole lot of him probably in the World Series. And, you know, the Knack and Kasperius, there are some guys they've drafted, but, you know, I think the bullpen game, and it's something that, you know, the teams that have good bullpens, we've seen it with the Orioles where they're kind of always consistently churning those back end of the 40-man roster spots to acquire some of these guys. And if, you know, they have good advanced scouting and analysts that are identifying things and understand their coaching staff and their player development department, and they're sort of in lockstep in terms of philosophy and, you know, how the acquisition sort of funnels down, I think that you end up with stronger bullpens and the ability to withstand, you know, some major injuries that, you know, certainly the Dodgers had to withstand this year. So it is interesting. And I think we understand at this point, modern baseball, but bullpens are going to be a big part of the conversation in this series. they're going to control some games, and how well they perform is going to determine probably who wins this series.
That's something I want to get into more. I want to get into our picks for who we think is going to win it right after this quick break.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
And we're back. So, Jeff, you just kind of teed this off here, which is, at first, if you asked me, I think I was on a radio show last weekend. They said, so who do you think is going to win? And I said, the Yankees. And my reasoning is that, you know, they have a much more comfortable, much more set starting pitching. You know, they have Cole, who I would assume is at least going to give you two starts in this and might be available for a third game, depending on how this all goes. If it goes seven. You've got Carlos Rodon, who has been a little bit hot and cold, but I do always love the ability for Carlos Rodon to kind of rise to the moment. We've seen that going back to his days at NC State. You know, this is a team that has, you know, then they have Clark Schmidt, they have Luis Hill. This is a team that doesn't need to go to a bullpen game. The Dodgers have already said they're going to have a bullpen game. They might end up having more than that because we know that they're going to have Yamamoto. We know that at some point we're going to see Walker Buehler, and we know we're going to see Jack Flaherty. Like, Flaherty and Yamamoto are kind of their starters, and then Buehler's their one where they're like, he'll go at some point, but we'll see kind of how this goes. Because Buehler obviously is not the same as he's been at his best. And then they're going to have a bullpen game. They may end up kind of, depending on how Buehler goes, even having multiple. And so I was like, okay, the Yankees are going to win this. Both teams have great lineups. Then I did a little bit more work for a story that's up at BA, you know, and kind of looked in this, and it's like, oh, I really thought, like, let's just start with a bullpen game, a game where you start a reliever and you are throwing Johnny Holstaff, the old Sunday in college baseball approach to this, where it's like, we got our Friday starter, we got our Saturday starter, and then we've got everyone else to get us to the, you know, to win a game on Sunday. I kind of, you know, that is a position of desperation in some ways. This is not somewhere that the Dodgers want to be. In an ideal world, Tyler Glasnow would be starting, you know, and it'd be like, okay, we're starting with Glasnow. We got Yamamoto. We've got Flaherty. And by the way, a healthy Clayton Kershaw is going to pitch game four. Okay, great. Wonderful. And by the way, or it could be Tony Gonsolin or Dustin May or, you know, Gavin Stone. We could go down the list of guys who are hurt who could have been. So this is not the way the Dodgers wrote it out. But diving into that, I kind of did expect, I didn't expect that it was going to be like, oh, teams are winning 30% of the time when they start a bullpen game. But I did expect that going back to the last decade, when you have a bullpen game in the postseason, that teams would be 15-15 in those. Like, it's not even been like a disadvantage in those games. And teams are above 500 in winning the series in which they bullpen game. The Dodgers this year, the Diamondbacks last year, the Braves in 21, and the Dodgers in 20 all had bullpen games while getting to the World Series. And in the case of the 2020 Dodgers and the 2021 Braves, in winning the World Series. So there's this part of me that kind of thinks like, oh, if you have to bullpen in the World Series, that probably means you're really tying one arm behind your back. I can't say that anymore. I think to preface, I think I'm switching my pick. I'm now, you know, I'm going to own this. It's not something where if the Yankees win this, I go, see, I was on Mad Dog Radio last weekend and I picked it. I'm owning that I'm switching my pick, but I'm going
to
say
Dodgers. You're just playing to the audience, JJ.
Yeah, I'm going both ways, you know. I do think that I thought that was going to be more of a disadvantage than maybe it will be. Like, I kind of lead into that, Jeff, like, before we get your pick. Obviously, the reason teams use bullpen games is because they are out of starters. But I would say the second part of that is that there's the way that the game has changed now is if this was 2011, then the Dodgers would be starting Landon Knack and kind of saying, look, we know that Landon Knack's not an ideal scenario, but he's stretched out. He's our best option for game four, and we're only going to start him once in the series. And what teams have come to realize is you're much better off throwing an array of lesser pitchers in very small slices than you are to say, hey, are we going to catch lightning in a bottle and get 15 outs from one of those guys? Is that a good way to explain why bullpenning has become more prevalent in the postseason?
Yeah. And I think if you just go back to watching playoff games situationally over the years, you know, if there's a starter that goes out there and gets murdered in the first inning, more often or second, more often than not, those guys were getting pulled out of games anyway. What I think it does allow you to do is you understand the matchup and the opponent, and you sort of get to play matchups throughout the game. And maybe you do have somebody like Landon Knack, and Knack can go three innings. And you get up to you get up in the second inning, 6-0, something like mm-hmm. that happens, right? You score in the first and the second. All of a sudden you're kind of on cruise control. Like, yeah, we'll let Knack go a few innings. And then, you know, if we get into trouble, we have all these other options. And, you know, if you start to build up that lead and the game is kind of out of hand in the seventh inning, you know, you're using the back end of your bullpen. Now on the other side of it, you know, if you do need these guys and it's a tight game throughout, you're going to be able to deploy a variety of options. And I think the way that these bullpens are built too, you don't really have like the closer. There's no guy coming out here. There's no Mariano where you know he's getting the ninth, right? They can sort of play the matchups on both sides. And, you know, I think ultimately that allows you to maybe navigate the game even more efficiently. We've seen some really well-pitched bullpen games throughout this playoff run. And especially with, you know, the Dodgers, we've seen some really good games. And I think, you know, overall that it's aesthetically not pleasing, but I think the numbers and just being able to play the matchups and manage the game how you want and consistently have guys out there, you know, with good stuff who can't get outs in a role more, so to speak, that they're comfortable with. You know, I think that probably speaks volumes as opposed to having to roll out with, you know, a guy you're hoping gives you five and can dive, you know, without giving up more than two runs.
The thing that stands out to me with it, two things that kind of feed this, and I don't know how to answer for it, but if you want a bullpen, the World Series is about the easiest place to bullpen because we're going Friday, Saturday, and then Sunday's off. That's a full reset where even if your bullpen's a little gassed, not a lot, but a little gassed. Okay, you get to reset again. Then we go 3 days again. Then you get another day off. Reset again, game 6-7. So we are in a situation here where you get to rest and recover for one. But the other is like you said, especially the Dodgers facing the Yankees. I kind of like when you talk about game planning it, there's probably no team more prone to being game planned than this Yankees lineup, because you kind of look at it as, is this a Soto Judge inning, Soto Judge Stanton inning, or is this a everyone else inning? You know what I'm saying? Like, okay, who's batting this inning? Rizzo, Volpe, Verdugo. Okay, we're going to attack those guys. But that's different than Soto's leading off this inning. That's an inning that you're going to approach differently in a way that the Dodgers lineup is a little bit not as easy to game plan. Obviously, you're 100%. I think that you saw the Padres do this really well. Didn't get them out of it completely. But like Shohei Ohtani, you want to make sure that you have the pitcher you want facing Ohtani in almost any non-first, maybe third inning situation, right? If it's the fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth, and the game is close, you're like, who is our best guy to get Ohtani out? We want him in the game. You're looking at Betts. You're looking at Freeman. You know, the top of this order is really strong, especially if Freddie can move a little bit better now, having had a couple more days to recover. But the bottom of this lineup also, like Tommy Edman, Kike Hernandez, postseason Babe Ruth when it comes to, I think, what, 15 postseason home runs or something, which is absurd.
It's like, I was about to say that he goes from like a 45 to like a 60, 70 in the playoffs.
Teoscar, Andy Páez, like this is a lineup where there's more guys where you need to kind of match up, I'd say a little bit more than it is with the Yankees. And we're going to probably see that a lot in this series. So that tees me up to ask you, okay, I'm picking Dodgers in, I'll go 7. I want this, there's a little bit of a rooting for baseball part there. If this series goes 7 and it's Dodgers Yankees and we've got a game 7, that is about as best we can have it for baseball. But what's your pick?
Yeah. So in the offseason, Dylan and I both picked Yankees versus Dodgers, which we picked the easy one. I mean, it's not like we're like some great prognosticators because of this, but I picked Dodgers in 5. So I picked it in the offseason. There's no reason for me to change my mind. So I'm going to say Dodgers in 5, but I think it will be some close, hard-fought games over this 5-game series. But part of me does want to see it go 7. But, yeah, I'm going with the Dodgers. I just think the offenses in this series are you know, both so good at the top, and they're going to produce a fair amount of runs that – I think it could negate some of the starting pitching advantages, you know, particularly when you get beyond the first two. Because I think, you know, Cole versus Flaherty and then Rodon versus Yamamoto are pretty good matchups, you know. But I do think, you know, the bullpens are going to come into play. And
Versus Schmidt, you know, is not the same.
No, it's not. Though Schmidt has honestly been really, really good. I think that's the differentiator there, is like him and Heel being able to roll those guys out there is definitely a bit of an advantage for keeping the bullpen fresh, especially if this does go 7 games. But I just think that Dodgers offense is just so relentless. You know, you look 1 through 9 right now with the way that, you know, Enrique Hernandez has been hitting, and Tommy Edman on top of that, you know. And it's well balanced between lefties and righties. Of course, you know, Edmund is a switch hitter as well. So they're tough to match up against too, because there's not sort of this long run of, you know, right-handers or left-handers or whatever. And I think you could probably say that for both lineups to an extent, but it's just deeper. And I think offensively they're going to overtake the Yankees. So yeah, I think it could be a great series. Wouldn't shock me if the Yankees win this series. No bias there at all. But I think in the end, it's going to be the Dodgers.
It's going to be fun, though. We both know that. We're going to, you know, can't wait. Here we go. This is what we kind of build up to. There's a here's a selfish one on my end. Again, I don't have a rooting interest in this. But when I went out to spring training, one of the first things I saw out of spring training was Andy Páez hit 2 home runs in a backfield spring training game. It would be really kind of cool as a bookend if Andy Páez kind of hits a, you know, he already had a 2 home run game in the postseason. But if he had a like a big homer at the end of it, it's like, okay, that's a perfect bookend on the JJ, the selfish JJ season, which is to start the year by seeing someone do something great on the backfields and to see him end it by doing something great in the World Series. You know, that would be, again, from a personal perspective, that would be fun. I'm really excited that Brent Honeywell is getting this opportunity. I've done the Rays list for many, many years on and off, and I feel like I wrote him up so many years where it was like, if Honeywell can stay healthy, watch out. And then next year be like, but Brent Honeywell did not stay healthy. If Brent Honeywell can stay healthy, watch out. Obviously the career, I mean, there's kind of a sliding doors here thing where there's a different version where Brent Honeywell starting one of these games because he ended up being the starter we thought he was going to be. But it is still cool to see him get this opportunity. Someone who had to grind through rehab, injury rehab after injury rehab after injury rehab to get here.
Yeah, and I think the setting of that is important too. Like, I mean, he was on the cusp of the major leagues, had not been injured at that point. And I think in a lot of other organizations in the right year, probably would have been up in the big leagues in August of that year. I can remember him tweeting at the Rays. Like every time someone tweeted that you should call up Brent Honeywell, I think he actually retweeted it. And he was always kind of a character too. So I think in some way, shape or form, you know, the tragedy seems to be, you know, heading to a good place, even if it's not in the role that we had intended. But, you know, entering his age 30 season next year as a potential World Series champion, I think that's at least a nice positive of a career that had, you know, a lot of speed bumps.
But, well, we're going to look forward to seeing it. You know, we'll have a lot here at baseballamerica.com in the upcoming weeks. But thank you, Jeff, and thank you for the download. Another Baseball America World Series podcast in this case. You know, please like and subscribe. If you're watching this on YouTube, click the bell. If you're doing on your podcast, you know, if you want to leave us a review, that always helps other people discover the podcast. For Jeff, I'm JJ. So long, everybody.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.